Hi, my name is Mark Schweigert. I'm a developer evangelist at Microsoft, focusing on U.S. government customers.
And I'm James Chittenden. I'm a user experience evangelist with U.S. public sector, and I also work with Mark.
So we're here in Chicago at the offices of Tanagram Partners to talk about a CodePlex project that they've done. We're here with Joseph and Tim. And so why don't you guys tell us a little bit about Tanagram?
Tanagram is, we've got long, deep roots in graphic design, but ultimately what we've become today is an innovation shop for digital technology. I like to say, people come to us to figure out what's next, and we've got another video we're going to do here in a second and talking about some really cool advanced tech. But one of the things we get very excited about is the GUI interface and how do we get past the keyboard, the mouse, and Windows icons, menus and pointers, WIMPs. So that's kind of our focus right now, is really dealing with the GUI interface and being excited about it.
And bringing that technology to multiple environments. One of the big advantages that we see with something like natural user interface is the ability to bring the advantage of something like computing can offer to a new environment. That's really what we're interested in exploring, is what GUI means. GUI is not just touch, even though that's what this project focuses on, and it's one of the big parts of natural user interface, but also the inclusion of things like voice and audio commands, also physical gesture and camera commands, among other things. So that's really our focus, is looking into the natural user interface realm and finding out where it fits and what next is really going to look like.
Right. Yeah. We want to make people touch data.
So I hear you guys have been working on a project on CodePlex, on touch, so tell me what you've been working on.
CodePlex, we posted it's like a fire starter kit. And you folks at Microsoft have done some great work with the upcoming WPF4 and Silverlight libraries with the touch integration, but we're in the WPF 3.5 Service Pack 1 space. We're really, we spend a lot of time out on the fringe, and we got to look behind us, and we realize we have to build a road to get to where our visions are taking us. So, we really, thought that, hey, we're doing this. Why don't we help out a little bit? And together, we found some pretty cool things, a pretty cool path we could do using behaviors as a transitional technology.
And so talk to us a little bit about behaviors, what they are, and why you guys thought that behaviors made sense to be applied to touch solutions.
And I think initially that's founded in, as we understand it, the behaviors were first introduced in the Blend SDK, and are compatible with .NET 3.5. And I think they were really maybe more in the eyes of the designer side of the fence, and maybe less known in the developer communities in their form, because they were released in that Blend SDK. But as soon as we saw them, they really kind of stoked our creative interest in terms of implementation, because they are very powerful. Really, it was a matter of being able to add new programmatic or logical behavior to an object or a control that exists today without necessarily needing to do modifications to it, and kind of freeing ourselves from that coupling point of maybe creating a brand new control was really something that we just saw as a massive advantage, especially when you speak about something like touch, because at least in today's world, it really is a fairly focused application. It has to be applied only to a touch machine. So, being able to design an interface and then porting it to maybe multiple environments, including a WIMPs environment that involves a mouse and a pointer, and also a touch environment, up to this point are really two separate coding endeavors. What behaviors really allow us to do is do our primary investment in terms of user interface in the Blend or Visual Studio environment, and then really use behaviors to just decorate that user interface with new interaction types that either include the mouse or include touch. And that's really the advantage that behaviors buy us, is being able to do some form of decoupled design to the interface, and then applying the actual implementation of it later in the design phase or at design time.
So one of the things that I love about behaviors is that you can apply the same thing across WPF and Silverlight in a consistent way, right? The way that you apply a behavior in Silverlight is the way that you apply the same behavior in WPF. Now, the reality is that in some cases, APIs are different across Silverlight and WPF, and behaviors are this great way of being able to hide that, shield that from the person who really just wants to get that functionality in their user interface.
Absolutely, and that was one of the biggest things we saw at the beginning was, you know, doing investigations into both APIs, both the Silverlight API and the WPF Touch API do have distinctions between them, and they are really different libraries. Some of them significant from the implementation and programmatic perspective. And what behaviors really allowed us to do was, you know, like you spoke about, totally encapsulate a lot of those differences behind a very common implementation practice of just putting code into, or just putting XAML into your presentation document.
Or for, in my world, drag and drop. But
That's right.
The folks at the Expression Blend team really did an amazing job. I mean, they kind of stepped out of their box and they said, you know, we're going to build these blend behaviors. They don't really require blend, but guess what? You can take these code snippets and now they become this transitional piece that you can drop on either a WPF element or a Silverlight element. Truth be told, there's subtle variations between each, but the fact that you can just drop in place makes it a really powerful tool. And you know, it's an SDK install. I mean, they give it out free. It's amazing.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point because in my interactions with folks, when I start to talk to them about blend behaviors, especially because I focus mostly on sort of the traditional hardcore developer, right? They say, well, that's a blend thing. I can't use that. I have to have blend. And this SDK can be used for any developer who wants this kind of functionality. And in fact, in the demo that you're going to show us later on, right, you're going to show us doing this straight in Visual Studio, right? Just kind of hit home the fact that developer can use this functionality.
And then from the designer side, I mean, blend behaviors let you have that what you see is what you get style of just drag and drop.
That's right.
You know, if I want drag and drop behavior on this particular control, I just drag it and boom, it's there.
Absolutely.
Same with what you guys are doing with
multi. And I guess the way I interpret that, you know, another way of saying that is almost like blend behaviors are a perfect example of this sort of designer-developer workflow story that Microsoft has been talking about that XAML and WPF and Silverlight give you, right? They sort of embody that principle, which is really kind of cool.
And to be frank, I did play kind of both roles on this particular project, both developer and designer. So I got to see that role play out firsthand, but it absolutely fits into a beautiful workflow where there really was a clean separation between the development work I did and the outcome that resulted from programming that behavior. And then, like Joe said, the drag and drop implementation of it. I could have done, you know, all of that coding really on my own and just communicated through either documentation or self-documenting code what the XAML should look like. And really anybody could then take the result of that code and with just a very little XAML decoration or drag and drop, implement all of the sophisticated coding that we did for this project. It really is the realization of you know, the vision of, you know, having that good collaborative and kind of smooth transition between the development phase and then the design and implementation phase.
So I want to see some of this stuff. So let's dig in and start looking at some of this stuff in action.
Sounds good.
This is the liven this guy back up. This is actually the Silverlight control that we made, and we call it the translate, rotate, scale behavior, mainly because it operates on the three dimensions that you would envision, maybe in the real world in terms of looking at something on a table. So what we wanted to realize was the ability to put things onto a canvas and then have them touch interactable. And really, I think the behavior itself is really worth 1,000 words of description.
And we really wanted to stick with a naming convention. You can keep going, but we wanted to stick with a naming convention that was more factual than glorified. You know, the name of the thing, translate, rotate, scale, is literally what the control system does. So you can see Tim's doing a two-finger zoom here. You can see that we've got, show them the physics. Come on, give us some physics. There you go. So there's physics algorithms in there. There's a bounce. There's selectable nature. This particular object has a
And so it's not that these things can't be done in Silverlight or WPF as is now, right?
That's because right.
Any developer can take the base APIs and implement something like that.
That's right.
The real challenge is that it takes a lot of coding effort to make this scenario happen across Silverlight and WPF 3.5.
That's right. And in the previous world, this would really be an exercise of writing a handful of custom controls and then implementing them in this particular Silverlight project. So again, from day one, you're really doing a development cycle that's focused on a particular platform and particular implementation. Mm-hmm. So maybe what we should walk through right now is the actual XAML that kind of puts this together to show essentially how we were able to separate and encapsulate those two responsibilities into kind of separate code spaces.
I think just before we jump into that, though, I do want to talk about the religion here. And you know, I don't want to be pretentious. That's not my point. But, you know, we do take code seriously. We think code can be poetry. It can be art. And some of the work that we're putting into this is starting to showcase, you know, our fascination and love of OO and, you know, how clean and how simple things can be. You know, both from a user standpoint as well as just from the coder standpoint, we aspire to a certain level of aesthetics with our code. So we hope they say. And actually, one of our pieces is about to be updated with another author on CodePlex's work, because they did a really good job with that particular control.
Yeah, and really this was our opportunity to stand on the shoulders of a well-authored framework as well. Yeah. The generic behavior implementation is actually very elegant, and you know that really is what facilitated you know a lot of the separation that we've talked about up to this point.
Yeah. Yeah, and finally, I mean, as I said in the beginning, we're kind of out there on the fringe. We're doing things with augmented reality, gestural. Tim's talking about spoken gestural haptic. You know, we've got all these different interface technologies that are really becoming data swimming through our environment in a very naturalistic way. Imagine a little avatar floating next to my head that could be, you know, bringing me a message from somebody else.
So you're saying natural user interface isn't just about touch.
No, this is definitely a transitional piece, but the hardware exists for this, right?
Right.
The hardware for a lot of the technologies we were just talking about exists too, but they're not socialized like this one is becoming.
Right.
So, you know, we're gonna see a lot of new computing surfaces come out that are touch.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, you know, we'll move away from them, but I think what's really exciting right now is there's a big push.
Yeah.
So we got that momentum, and we've got developers who are interested in trying to experiment mm-hmm. with NUI. So that's really why we got excited when we started talking about, you know, how we can use behaviors to transition, to help people transition.
And it's going to be a natural evolution in that direction. You know, we've been using Windows and keyboards and mice for a long time, and this is really the next step away from that. I can interact directly, you know, with this on the screen that it's presented to me.
Yeah.
But another environment is me sitting on my couch at home interacting with my TV.
Mm-hmm.
In this particular case, I would have to get up and approach the TV to interact with it. So, you know, the next stage of the next step of natural user interface is, of course, using the webcam to interpret the gestures that I'm doing to translate to on-screen behaviors, possibly also through speech and other metaphors as well. But, you know, this is a very primary and important step, you know, on that road that we're walking down right now.
Yeah, you know, the way I see it is that sort of Windows 7 brings, you know, an element of natural user interfaces, touch, to the masses in a very commoditized way such that anybody can go out there and take their existing PC, go buy a, you know, a $300 monitor, plug it in their computer, and be able to interact with software through physical manipulation and interaction.
Yeah. Right. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I would challenge anybody who's stepping into the NUI space to imagine an interface that doesn't have a keyboard, that doesn't have an on-screen keyboard, you know, or any variation of any kind of artificial, abstracted object that technology forced us, you know, Xerox part. I'm not getting into anything. I'm just saying NUI is not about a keyboard.
Right. So why don't we just dig into the actual behaviors in the code and what, you know, what this means for developers who want to use this stuff.
Sounds good. Great. So we wanted to give you a basic walkthrough from the XAML perspective of what you'll be looking at if you go to touch.coplex.com and download the code that we've been talking about in this interview. What we have here is a basic Silverlight example. At the top level, we really just have a tab control. And in the second tab, we've placed a basic Silverlight list box. This is really it in its current form. It just has, you know, a bunch of list box items inside of it. And why don't we fire it up and see what renders. And in its basic form, you know, it's primarily designed for mouse interaction. And if we touch it, the expected behavior that I think most users would come to expect is not really what we realize here. It just highlights the item that my finger touches. So let's go back to the code. And what I'm going to do is I have a code snippet here of the behavior for the list box. I'm going to drop this onto the list box, briefly format that guy. And now we've dropped on the interaction dot behaviors, and it's the touch scroll behavior. So let's run this guy one more time and jump back over to the list box. And as you can see, it renders exactly the same visually as it did last time, except for this time, when we go to interact with it based on touch, you can see the list scrolls, you know, allows selection, and you know, follows the basic gestures that my hands perform on the screen. And that was done simply by adding this particular behavior to the list box. So all of that behavior was essentially inherited from just making this particular XAML change. We see the same thing on the touch, rotate, and zoom side, where we simply have a canvas populated with a couple different images, but we have one here. The first image that's in the canvas is currently undecorated with the behavior. So we'll run this and show the default behavior. Obviously, an image in a canvas is just that. It's a static image. Nothing happens when you interact with it. It really is just statically placed on the screen. However, when I come over here and grab from my shelf the translate, rotate, and scale behavior and put this inside the scope of the image, we will now essentially assume all of the touch behavior associated with the translate, rotate, and scale behavior. So if I rerun this application simply by adding that XAML, we now have a fully touch-enabled image that lives inside the canvas, and it assumes all of the, you know, all of the touch and multi-touch gestures that we worked on for the touch.coplex.com project.
So Tim, this is great. Now, you know, I think people watching kind of say to themselves, "That's great, but you know, that's kind of what I expect, right?" And in essence, that's exactly why you guys did this project, because this is what people expect. Exactly. Why don't you actually show us a little bit about what it really takes to accomplish all this stuff that you're hiding from folks so that they get this functionality for free?
So what we have here is really the benefit that you see when you use a behavior like this. You know, the translate, rotate, scale behavior relates to the object that we actually use, you know, for the behavior. And as you can see here, we have, you know, 300, 400, maybe 500 lines of logic and code here related to the physics, the programming, the hooks involved, and glue involved in getting touch behaviors to be associated with a particular user control. And the beauty of this is that you don't have to know any of it. You really just have to decorate your user control with a behavior, and it will automatically assume all of the logic and all of the code living in this class as it lives right now. So you get to be blissfully ignorant of the actual implementation and simply decorate your objects with these behaviors to assume the touch behavior.
I was going to say, you know, if you want to get your learn on about the math behind the physics, it's there.
Right.
You know.
You know, and as I'm looking, you know, through you scrolling through all this code, right? To me, it just sort of hits home, you know, what you guys were saying earlier, why you did this in the first place, because that doesn't look like easy stuff to write if you had to do it from scratch.
Correct. And you also don't want to do it over and over. You don't want to duplicate your work. The beauty of the behavior is that it can be written once and applied to many different user controls, as opposed to having to start from scratch and coding out your own library of touch-enabled user controls and implementing them separately. This really affords you the ability to write the object once, code the behaviors in there, and then apply it multiple times in multiple different situations.
Great. So can you show us it working in WPF as well?
Yeah, sure. So the other advantage of using behaviors was the fact that, you know, like we talked about earlier in the video, we got to build a lot of congruence between the implementation between the WPF and the Silverlight. So now I'm going to run the WPF application. And as you can see, the behavior from a user perspective is exactly the same. Here again, we have a list that's touch scrolled enabled with the behavior that we provided. In the second tab, we have the translate, rotate, scale behavior, same images, same user experience, same capabilities.
And so do I have to write code differently because we're in WPF and Silverlight versus Silverlight?
Absolutely not. Now, that's one of the beauties of this particular implementation. Here we have the XAML, that actually put together what we were just looking at in the WPF world. And as you can see, it looks actually identical to the implementation that we just had on the Silverlight side. Again, we have a tab item populated with the list box, decorated with a behavior. The behavior has the same exact name as and is implemented the same way as it was in Silverlight.
But if I were doing this myself, right, I'd actually be using different APIs in WPF versus Silverlight.
That's right, and that's one of the dirty little secrets hidden behind the encapsulation of these behaviors is that, you know, the behaviors are implemented exactly the same, and they hide all of the differences that you know, the APIs actually possess.
So this is some really cool stuff, guys. I guess what Mark and I are trying to figure out, and I'm sure the audience is, you know, where are you guys going with this project? You know, what's the direction for this? I know this is open sourced on CodePlex, but how can we help as a community? What is the point of this project, and how can we kind of get involved?
Well, I'm going to say participation first. You know, anybody wants to toss in, we've got the discussion forums open. We've got, you know, a number of channels we're trying to listen on and participate. We've got, right now the code's beta. It needs beaten up. It, you know, we have to grow it, right? This is a transitionary code, but we expect to use a lot of the work that we've done here in gesture-based, vocal-based, again haptic, potentially behaviors. So we think that there's a lot of opportunity here to take this where we're going with the complete new experience.
And it's always exciting to see what the wider audience comes up with in terms of ideas. I mean, we did a lot of you know, intellectual investment into this project and thinking about how to implement things the right way. But of course, you know, the beauty of CodePlex and the open source community in general is you never know where the next great idea is going to come from. So we're really excited to have participation, like Joe said, in something like this project, and, you know, getting the feedback, seeing what's next. You know, not just us driving into the future, but having people drive us into the future as well. It's a great opportunity.
We have two code projects already participating in the code, and we'd like more. We have also a new concept that Tim and I were talking about. I'll throw out there. This is going to only apply to surfaces that would have, you know, 10-ish touch points, not the stuff we get today that has two. But we believe that we can infer pressure by measuring the touch point's diameter and use that as a rotate cue. So if that makes sense, as I press on this table, my fingers make imprints on the screen. It knows the size. If I press forward, the guys in front get bigger. And from that, we can start to infer some pretty cool manipulations in the surface that are dimensional.
Wow, that's cool. Well, thanks, guys, for taking the time to chat with Mark and I. Appreciate it. This is some really cool stuff. And I'm definitely looking forward to see what's next.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, where things go. Thank you.
Thank you.
Us too. Thanks, guys.